Eilam mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. These are the laws that you should set before them. Now Hirsch has an interesting interpretation. He adds the word mishpat, law, but he adds like these are the social laws that you should set before them. Like he inserts the word social regarding the mishpat. And the significance the Chazal tell us ve'eilam mishpatim, that they have a vav. It begins with the conjunction, and these are the mishpatim. So Rashi says, ve'ele, the expression with the vav, mosif ala mishoni. A vav always adds on to the vav. Like not only this, but also this. Which would read that just like the first ones on the Sinai, nobody questions Aseres HaDibros in the previous chapter, very clear that it came from Har Sinai. So the Mishpatim here, although they're social laws, are also brought down, they also come from Sinai. So in this, the book, there are many, many interpretations. But Rabbi Feinstein writes, example, what is the significance of the Ve'ela Mishpatim with the book to tell us that these social laws are in Sinai? This already is taught another time. It says in the Sedra of Bahar, by the laws of Shemitah, it says there that Torah writes specially Har Sinai to tell you that every law written in the Torah was given on Sinai. So why was it necessary to repeat it here again? So he says that the emphasis is true, that you could think that it was given on Sinai. True, every law was given on Sinai. But perhaps the laws dealing with a slave girl are different than the Ten Commandments itself. Say the Aseres HaDibros, you're speaking about killing people, about other major cardinal sins and deviations, you'll say, but that of course has great significance. But how much significance could this social law dealing with a slave or a young slave girl, or one person's ox going another, they're all social ordinances and laws. And true, they were given in Sinai, but you can't really say that they have the same kedusha, the same holiness. So that's why the Eila Mishpatim tells you, no, that laws dealing with mamonas, with money that is not yours, has really the same holiness. And Rabbi Feinstein adds the idea, why? Because it also questions Anechi Hashem Lekecha. What does Anechi Hashem Lekecha mean? I'm the Lord your God who guides you, who oversees you, who is concerned for you. Now, if you would be believing that truthfully and wholeheartedly, so then money that does not belong to you, that money you would say, I don't believe, that I don't want anything to do with money because I don't need that money. I believe that God will provide if I act justly. So the fact that you have disputes over ordinances shows perhaps that the person somehow questions deep down the hanhoga, the fact that God indeed is the guardian and concern for all of mankind. So he says deep below the so-called social and monetary issues, you find below that also a basic question of emunah b'Hashem. If a person adheres to every letter in his social monetary relationships, it's because he has true faith in God, because he doesn't have to go ahead and touch something that doesn't belong to him. So the Ma'ela Mesinai is not just telling you, he says, that it was given on Sinai. That we know, of course. But Ma'ela Mesinai, that this has the same Kedusha, the same, not only the same sanctity, because anything that was given from God has the same sanctity, but it has the same implication of your acceptance of the divine God, because otherwise a person would not go and cheat. When a person goes ahead and accumulates wealth and so on, which is really not his due, so then it leads us to question if God provides for man. In fact, that was the whole purpose of the desert, the wilderness, the 40 years, to teach you that God provides for you. And you don't have to go ahead and take wealth or accumulate money that does not really belong to you. So what he's trying to say is that, you know, to our great sorrow, many of us, and we find that there are people who are supposedly, they attest to their belief in God and so on, but how deep and strong and sincere is that belief, that when it comes to daily social interrelationships and monetary questions, all of a sudden they are wild. They transgress or trespass, and as if God is not involved and God doesn't exist. So when you go deep down in that, you could question indeed their fidelity and their recognition of the omnipotent Creator who provides for everyone. So what he's trying to say, even in this, it's the same theological question as putting on tefillin or keeping Shabbos. That's the significance of Ma'ele Misina. That's how he wants to emphasize. Now, from the words of Asher, tossing lifnehem, that you should place before them. Chazal tell us it has to be kishulchan aruch, right? Umunach lifnehem. It has to be like you're preparing a table. Now, there are many interpretations and lessons that we can learn from this phrase. The Mechilta says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, Lo salal daitcha, don't even contemplate, lame to say, Eshne Elohem HaPerit, that I'll go and I'll teach one time, two times, or three times, I'll tell them that, but I'm not going to bother to see that they really understand it. I'm willing to repeat it once, twice, three times. But that I should really go into every individual to see in depth that they understand it, I'm not going to be matriach myself. That's already a little bit too much. So therefore the Pasuk says, Asher tosim lifnehem. You have to prepare it. If the person has difficulty understanding, it's like a little baby that has difficulty swallowing, so you'll chop up the potatoes, you'll chop up the bananas, in order that it should be able to digest. So here also, it's not just the presentation of the material, but also you have to be able to present it and to see that the student, at the level he's in, is able to really to comprehend. And this is a very important idea. First of all, a Rebbe, a teacher, has to plan. When he plans to present something, he should plan to present it in such a fashion, I mean, think out how this student would react, and that one, to go into detail almost in this presentation, that it should be purposeful and intended to fulfill this purpose. Now, the obligation on a Rebbe is just unbelievable. Not a Rebbe in a Rebbe sense, but when someone is Malame Torah, teaches somebody Torah. The Gemara brings down a case where Prada had a student that he used to have, he had to teach him 400 times the same thing. He would have to sit and concentrate 400 times the same thing before he understood it. So the Gemara continues, it was one day, so he had to do the milsa, the mitzvah. He knew that the Rebbe would have to go away to do a mitzvah. So the Rebbe would have to leave early. So the student wasn't really relaxed because he kept on thinking, oh, the Rebbe's going to be leaving, and the Rebbe's going to be leaving. So as he was teaching him 250, 270, 290 times, he couldn't really reach it because he kept on thinking, what's going to happen? The Rebbe's going to go out. So he said, listen, contemplate what I'm telling you now. So he said, give your mind to it, and I will teach it to you. So then he went ahead and he taught him 400 times again. What does it teach us? That he has to be relaxed and not be concerned that the Rebbe will walk out in the middle. So that's how far he went. Now you have to have a lot of patience. So Gemara says afterward, a Basco came out and said to Prada, and they gave him all kind of blessings, that he merited this world and he merited the other world and so on because of his concern to teach Torah. And this is extremely important. In Pirkei Avos we find also that Chachamim Mizohar B'Divreichem, that you have to be extremely careful when you teach, because we have the treasure of Torah Shebaal Peh, to give over Torah Shebaal Peh. Now we know how it's difficult to give over something to 10 people and that each one should hear the same. You could say something and 10 people will give you a whole different and ask them, what did you just say? From A to Z, it'll be totally different, right? That's really what human nature is. In fact, that's why you could take history books in the same period, and you won't know they're talking about the same thing, because that's the meaning of his story. I mean, it's the person who's writing it is writing the story of what happened, and each person understands and contemplates different. So therefore, especially serious and damaging it could be is when you're giving over a halach, and difference from day to night, if something is permitted or it's not permitted. And the Chachamim, it says clearly, aside from having to teach it so the person really understands the depth of it, but also Chachamim Mizohar, we find the Gemara, the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, that Chacham have to be very careful, each nuance and each statement should not be able to be misconstrued and misunderstood. This has to go into their idea when they're teaching, that the words should not be able to be misconstrued or misunderstood. Therefore, you have a lot of times when they ask questions, say, when you have something like this, ask a shayla or something, because a lot of times the thing may be too delicate to be able to give over for the person to understand it. But there's a lot of truth, and this is a great emphasis placed on this because the Torah itself is the Elam Mishpatim, is the Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is not the main thing, it's Torah Shebaal Peh that interprets it. In fact, Hirsch goes into this in the Asher Tosin Lifneihem, in the passage which says you should set before them. He says that, and then the Torah starts giving us in verse 2, Ki seek ne'evet ivri, if you purchase a slave. So he says, it's a little, many ask, what is the beginning? Ki seek ne'evet ivri, if you're going to start a chapter dealing with social ordinances and interrelationships, why do you go pick Ki seek ne'evet ivri? I mean, a writer would start with a more pleasant or all-embracing kind of a law. Why does he pick only this exceptional law? So Hirsch says this strengthens the idea that the total and the complete law had really been taught Shebaal Peh through the 40 years before Moshe came and wrote it down. So there was no question that they, the only idea that they took out of here, to quote him, that the general principles of justice are really not so much given in this book. But preferably, he says, we have single concrete cases, and these are described in the book in such an instructive manner that the principles which underlie them and which have been entrusted to the living minds can easily be seen from them. So therefore, the idea is, like we've said many times, that this is a code. And the code here, well, in addition to the laws of Evid Ivri, but it chooses Evid Ivri as an example that this will remind us of the general principles inherent in the general law of treating individuals. So it picks for an example, Kisikne Evid Ivri, which is an extraordinary case. By telling you this extraordinary case, then we could appreciate how the Torah goes ahead and it's a human being. The written word to the oral word in the relation of short notes on a full and extensive lecture on any scientific subject. So if I would give you, some students know how to take notes, and then some write verbatim every word, which could go pages. Some will pick out a classic statement, and that statement inherent, if you study that statement, you'll be able to understand and to surmise the entire lecture, because inherent in that, you see the principles that were discussed. So he says, like, Yisik Ne'evet Ivri. Of course, the Yisik Ne'evet Ivri, the exception, how you're supposed to deal there with another fellow who is a person who was a criminal and so on, so that itself will give you an understanding of what the justice of Mishpatim is. But you know that this is not the verbatim information that's been handed to you. This is not the complete notes of the lecture. The complete notes of the lecture start from A and go to Z, but you've picked out the most descriptive case, which is unique and gives you an understanding of the entire concept of Mishpatim. So that's what he says, Asher Tosim Lifneihem, serve them this. This will be a way of presenting and they're retaining all the information that they've received. But what do we learn out from the idea of the Torah's concern? The Mishpatei HaTorah. We once had here, Rabbi Bleich was speaking here, and he brought down a famous pshat from the Beis HaLevi concerning Pesach. It's difficult really to comprehend. We've alluded to it a few times. The idea is, what came first, the Torah or the world? So of course, we always, under the statement, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hastakel b'raisa, that God looked in the Torah and created the world. Now, when you think into that, what does that mean? So, an example, we find Avraham Avinu baked matzahs, late baked matzahs, when the Malachim came to them in the early years, it says it was Pesach, and they were brought a korban Pesach, and they baked matzahs. But they kept those mitzvahs. So it bothers me. But this is a historical mitzvah, meaning there is a Yetzias Mitzrayim, which didn't take place. So what is the idea of baking matzahs? But when you think into it, the idea was that
The Torah already wrote the mitzvah of baking matzah. So now you had to have a historical time happening in the history of the world which would give a reason, right, to fulfill that mitzvah of baking matzahs. Because they went out of Egypt, and therefore they couldn't bake bread. Oh, here we could use that matzah that was in the blueprint of creation. Let's put it right here. That's how it works out. So in a sense, the blueprint of creation had a mitzvah of matzah. We then, a world was created which would use that mitzvah of matzah. But the mitzvah of matzah was always there before the actual event was created in the world to use it. And Avraham Avinu knew the mitzvah of matzah itself before the event was created in the world to use it. Now this principle is not only the Brisker Rav, but many Balei Musar speak on this. And really, the Rav Yeruchim, the Me'er Mashgiach, he goes into this in a great detail. For example, he wants to say, Eila Misinai, the significance of Misinai, meaning that all our civil ordinances, when you look at laws, Mishpatim, that we have, and you look at the Mishpatim that the other nations have. So, Mishpatim that other nations have are all based in consensus and moral codes and ethical values of that society. We realize that. Therefore, different worlds, different countries, different periods have different laws. In America, too, you could rescind a law, you could make a law, and it depends, and America has a unique situation of you could interpret the law, meaning the number of people got together, and it's interesting when you think into it, and they gave a general principle of the Constitution. And this general principle never thought of individual cases later. And now, we don't know what Jefferson or any of those, I mean, we don't know what those people, I mean, we don't know what they would think about abortion issues or things of this nature, or how freedom of the press, how far it goes, or what censorship, I mean, they didn't even contemplate this, or what is obscenity. But what do we do? They gave general principles, and then society interprets these principles by the court, living 200 years later, or 100, they're going to interpret what that person meant, the person never dreamt about. But at least this has some basis, we'll say, they're hanging their coats on a rack that's been there. But there are certain laws in certain countries where you don't even have that. That means you'll make laws up as the need really comes about. You'll rescind the laws as the political climate takes place, like we see now in Russia, this major earth-shaking event, that there's a one-party system or a many-party system, or religion would be permitted. I mean, these were laws, basic laws of a communist regime that went on for 70 years. Now these laws are being changed. So really, that is generally mishpatim. Therefore, certain times in one day, you accept the mishpatim, and tomorrow, when the people change, you go ahead and you change that. So all of their really are, therefore he says, all of their mishpatim really cannot fit in well. They have to be abrasive one to another, and many times contradictory, because the world is always in flow. And therefore, even if they'll change certain laws, other laws yet have not been changed. So you can't say that it's harmonious, assimilated laws that fit in and perfect, the puzzle is put together. It's just impossible, because that's the work of time and of human nature and people who are constantly changing the parts. The Torah, however, is different. Why? Because the Torah, we say, and we believe, was Masa Elohim, was God's creation. So it means not only does we don't bring it for a vote to human, to people. Do you think that this is outmoded? There's no such thing as bringing it to a vote. You know, we don't take the car apart and you think we need spark plugs in here or about a generator. I mean, it was given to you complete. So the Torah is not Yisod. Now, not only that, he says, not only is the Torah not the result of people's input, but people are a result of Torah. Not only did people not create the laws of Torah, but Torah created human beings. Because we say, the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hiskakel Be'araisa, this was the blueprint that God had, and according to this blueprint, Bora Omar, he created the world. So therefore, he says, all the mitzvos, how many mitzvos are there? There are 613 mitzvos. Man was created to those 613 mitzvos. We know not only that, There are 248 Ivorim, we say, in the person, which is Keneged Ramach Mitzvah Saseh. And then there are Shasah Gidim, there's 365 Gidim, is like sinews and muscles, that goes against the low Saseh. So in fact, the numerical equivalent of the Torah we find in the world. Now let's take an example. I'll give you an example. This will show you how we think. The mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. I gave one example from a different source from Pesach. But now when you look at the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim, so how do we understand it? Because we know that there's a father and a mother, and a mela, since you have a father and a mother, so therefore the Torah had to come ahead and give a mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. That's normally how we think of it. Humanly, you have to have a father and mother, otherwise how would you be here? And since you have to have a father and a mother and you're here, so therefore part of the Torah is a mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. That's the normal way to look at it, right? But maybe it's the other way around. Since there's a mitzvah in the Torah that says, Kavod Avicha V'Imecha, and this was here before the world was in existence. And for Hashem to make the propagation of people, that people should be able to reproduce, there are many ways that you could do it. You could do it in a thousand ways, which if you would have created that, that would have been natural. That people would shed skin and it would grow into a new being. I mean, there are many ways of reproduction. Why did they choose the Av V'Aim way of reproduction? So the way you're looking at it, because you looked in the Torah, and the Torah said, Kibei Kabei Des Avicha V'Zimecha. So therefore, we'll have to make a situation in our world that we're creating of an orb and a name, so you could be Mekayim the mitzvah of Kavod Avicha V'Imecha. That's the other way of looking at it, that the Torah, because we always say the Torah is blueprint creation, the words are always muttered, but we never really think into it, what does it mean? In this way it comes out that because there is this mitzvah, like the Briskalov said, because there was the mitzvah of eating Pesach, or eating matzah, therefore you have Yetzias Mitzrayim to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. So now, it comes out that the father and the mother are not the source of the mitzvah, but to the contrary, the mitzvah of the kibud comes, that brings about that there should be a father and a mother. So the idea is, if this is part of the world, and this is part of creation, that strengthens the point that the Torah cannot be changed, because the whole world, the structure is based on that. And that also gives us the idea of lo so sifu, lo sigriu. You can't add, or you can't really detract from the Torah, because if you add a little bit here, you detract a little bit here, so the whole structure, the whole building won't work. Now you could really appreciate this, and if a person believes that, he even goes further, he says, if a person will live, the world was made to be a perfect place really. That means if you live according to the instructions, you know, you have a lot of times you get machineries, electrical systems and others, and says, before you act, please read. But we don't bother reading the long instructions. It looks so simple. Somehow we go ahead and we botch up the telephone, the tape recorder, whatever it was. Why? Because we really didn't follow the detailed, minute instructions. The Torah was meant that the thing should work a lifelong guarantee. It would work forever, perfectly. Only if we follow the instruction, because it was built according to the instructions. There would be menucha, he says, there would be peace, there would be happiness, tranquility, and so on, if we would follow what the blueprint says. But if you try to improvise and so on, he says, then you really can't. And give a perfect example. You know, if you had an apartment building, right, and that apartment building was made with beautiful little apartments, you had bedrooms, you had kitchens, you had frigidaires, and you had everything that you need for an apartment building. But then after it's there, so the place, the situation changed locally, and they had to reconvert this, so they reconverted it into a hospital. So now when they reconverted it into a hospital, he says, we can understand that it had to have a lot of changes in order to be able to fulfill its new purpose, right? The dearest had to go ahead and knock down walls, make it bigger, take part of the kitchens out, and so on, and build all the necessities for a hospital. When you finish with operating rooms at the end, however, it's going to be a makeshift thing. It's not going to be as if you started out from the beginning clearly with your plans, and you were able to build according to your plans. So he says, the world was built out the Torah. It was built for this way and that way. If we're going to start playing around with the pieces and playing around with the walls, may be able to exist. We may be able to see that the world gets by, but you can't say this is what the architect had in mind. So in a sense, when you think of it in this way, you can't have kindness and revenge. There's so much hunger, so much anger, so much war. He gave, you didn't follow, you didn't read instructions. If you don't read the instruction, it isn't valid. And the idea was the world was created according to the blueprint, according to the Torah. This is the thought that he presents. And it's a very interesting thought when you think onto it. And that's the basic difference from Mishpatei HaTorah to Chukei HaOmnium. Now, when you think about it, a person, in order to be able to think or to, you know, to concentrate in this approach, a person who goes to study in school through his whole education and learns how to think in a certain way. And this is very strange if you go, because this involves your whole approach and outlook in life and your perspective in life. But the Torah perspective in life is a totally different one in going back to creation itself, which is I found this to be a very enlightening thought. That last time to a degree, it's like in this week's Seder also, it says, Acharei Rabin, that you go according to what? To the majority. The question is, what is considered going according to the majority, according to the laws of the Torah, the same laws of the Torah that says you go according to the majority, and that constitutes halacha, also tells us that there are circumstances that say that you don't go Basar Rov, meaning there are certain times when you don't go Basar Rov. There was like once a city where a lot of the common people stood up against the Rov and the people of the Kahal, because they're taking care of everything, Talmud Torah, the Mikveh, the Kashrus, without asking advice from the common people. So he said, one person said, Rebbe, he said, Hagana Torah Amra Acharabim Lahatas. I mean, the Torah also said, Acharabim Lahatas. So why don't you listen to us and give us the opportunity? So he answered the following. He gives him a marshal. He said, there was once a convention, and all 247 Avorim of limbs of the group got together, and they came to the head of the body, and they claimed to the head of the body, they are just whatever the head tells them to do, whatever the brain tells them to do, they have to do. Why can't they also have a vote? Why doesn't the head ask them once in a while, what should we do? But the head goes ahead, and whatever the head decides with his eyes or with his brain, he'll go and do it. Did he ask the fingernail if he should do it? So he says, how could that be? The Torah says, Acharei Rabin Lahatis, and not that you should rule over us. So the Rosh said, yes, the Torah said, Acharei Rabin Lahatis. In this land, it says it was speaking about a Sanhedrin. And over there, you had 71 heads, but not the toenail should come in also and have a vote against the head. That's obviously, it doesn't apply. Now there are, if you look in the Rambam, the way it's codified, based on Gemoris and Rishonim and Beni and other places, there are statutes, also laws, as to how this applies, Acharei Rabin Lahatis, when it applies and how it applies. And not only that, I think we spoke a few weeks ago, that once the Rabin take a vote, then that actually becomes halachic. That means Hashem makes, that becomes the law, because the fact that he gave them the authority to vote on that, that establishes the law. It may not be the law of the genesis of creation, but the law of the revelation. There was a new world created at revelation, and the law of the revelation is established by this vote. Why? Because the same Torah says that in circumstances when you have a Sanhedrin that fits the bill and that has the qualifications of a Sanhedrin, or that bears the inferior to the Sanhedrin in certain circumstances, that becomes the law. That's the idea of Acharei Rabin Lahatis. And the famous story, well, it was brought about the child, I forget which Goyim it was, so they asked him, you know, the Torah says, Acharei Rabin Lahatis, so why can't you go ahead, all of you, and accept Christianity? That's the road, you know, so they asked him as a child. So obviously there is no question that you don't go according to majority when there's a shaila. It's only when there is a question and it's not clear. So you go to one side, you go to the other. But going ahead and taking a rove of people and going against that which is specifically written in the Torah and annulling that, that you can't do. And there's a code of law as to how people can do it. But that's the rove, in a sense, is also relegated to certain conditions. Now,
The pasuk kisikne eved ivri sheish shanim yavo. We spoke about a little bit about Hirsch's point, but really there's another approach. They ask the same question. Why did the Torah begin with a ganef? I mean, if we want to present something, why didn't it begin with a chapter of Milas Chesed? Or like you find later in this chapter that you should go ahead and lend money to your brother in need. Why has pick the laws doesn't pick kisikne eved ivri? So they say an answer from the Zizel from Kellen, he says the following, that's true. If the Torah would have been written by man, so you would really begin with beautiful stories of Gomlei Chasodim and so on. But now he says, we're really all children of God, and God gave us the Torah. Now, if you have a son, if a person has a son who is a ganef, he has a nice family, but one son happens to be a ganef. So who is the father really concerned with? What occupies his time and his concern? You would say, the other sons, no, he's really occupied with the one that's the ganef, the one that's in trouble, the one that needs him, because he still has a parental love, and he tries to help that one who is that much greater need. So he says, so the Torah says here that what do you do if you find somebody, eved ivri, what does it mean an eved ivri? It's a ganef. And he couldn't pay back the money. So therefore they condemn him that he has to go to court. Now when he goes to court, and this is so true when he's saying, Zizel describing the criminal system and what incarceration is, says if he goes to court and he's put into jail, does this have any rehabilitative power? Has become rehabilitated in jail? He says to the contrary, and it's interesting because this was written about 100 years ago. He says to the contrary, he says in jail, he gets to meet a worse criminal to a lower level of depravity. Then when he goes out of jail, he doesn't have any food, doesn't have any parnasa. He has nothing to help him, so what does he automatically do? Again, he steals again, he goes to jail again, and then he keeps on getting lower and lower and lower. Because the time that he's in jail, it's not productive. And not only that, what will happen to his family when he's in jail? How will they be able to live? So the Torah tells us, no, that what do you do when you have a ganef? There's no such thing as a jail. You don't put him in jail. You sell him as a servant, an eved ivri, to a fine person. And that person will teach him, in a sense, how a human being is supposed to behave. He will teach him their affairs. Not only that, he will also give him, like it says here, day machsaro, he will give him whatever he needs. He has an obligation to give him whatever he needs. He's not allowed to treat him as a slave. It says here he shouldn't work with him aveda spera, to give him work, heartbreaking work, as backbreaking work as a slave. And it says, ki tov lo imoch, the Gemara tells us it means it's good for him with you. So it means that if you eat warm bread, fresh bread, he has to eat warm bread. And it says further, if he only has one pillow, he has to give it to the eved. If you see, that's the kind of a safeguard, a human safeguard, that's the kind of civil rights that he has, finding himself as an eved ivri. Not only that, it says that he goes ahead and he has to give the family teeth, he has to take care of the family, and everything else. So this is what the Torah is. So now, he says, this is the idea why the Torah says, because Hashem is not playing games here, trying to author an attractive book. What he's trying to do here is concern himself for the welfare of his son who has to be incarcerated, because his whole mind first is to provide for this son to try to rehabilitate him. So if that's his major point, then that's why the Torah begins, when it deals with these laws of justice and mishpatim, it will begin with this ganef, with this eved ivri. Please, you could keep him as an eved, but you have to do this and you have to do this to provide for his welfare. That's how Zizel explains it. Alright, this is in the first chapter, in chapter 21. Now, Kesef Talve Asami says there, we read that if you will loan money, Im Kesef Talve Asami Es Oni Imcho, if you choose to loan money, the person who is a poor person with you, I see a loan, Kenoshe, if you lend money to people, to the poor, you shouldn't be to him, Kenoshe, as a demanding creditor. That means you shouldn't go ahead constantly and ask for that. And then it says, Leisesimu Molov Nesher, you're not allowed to go ahead and take and place upon him Neshech, meaning a bite. That means you're not allowed to take ribis. You're not allowed to take profit for loaning him the money, any interest. So the Alshich sums it up more in this phrase of the Torah. He says what the Torah is trying to tell you here, in Kesef Talveh, if you will choose to loan money, right, as Ami, my people. So he says, you have to realize, if you loan money to a poor person, you have to realize that you're not giving him your money. But Esoni Imcho, the money of the poor person happens to be with you. And Hashem made you to be the apotropos, the overseer of his money, because that's how the world was made, the giver and the taker. So therefore, when you're lending him money, you have to realize God didn't decide to give you extra money. Why should he want to give you extra money, more than you need? And Ben Shalom gives every person what he needs. Why did he give you more? So the answer is because it's oni imcha, the money that the oni had, you were given to be the caretaker, and therefore you have to take care of it to loan him that money in the proper time and so on. That's the way he sums it up. Now, then he goes, the Gra also interprets this pasuk. The Chazal tell us that you're not allowed to loan, here's how the Gra learns in too, we always bring down. Chazal tell us when you loan money to someone, you're not allowed to loan him money without witnesses. So if you want b'metziah, even in the best circumstances, so there shouldn't develop any arguments and people forgetful, so it should always be money. You know, you can't depend on every other person's yeshiva. In fact, we hear good things. My son-in-law was in New York Sunday, so he was in a store there. So this is a good thing that he says. Or my daughter, they were both there. So he told me, came back, he says he saw something which gladdened his heart. What did he see? There was a lot of people in this department store, and poor shopping and so on. So he overheard by the owner, one fellow was saying, you know, I can't remember, I had either $400 or $500 bills, and I think I must have given you an extra $100 bill, but I'm not sure. So the owner says to him, if you gave me the extra $100 bill, for sure, here it is, I don't recall, but I'll give you right back if you gave me an extra $100 bill. But then the other one says, well, I just can't make up my mind 100%. So, I mean, here's the way two Jews are arguing. And this is the way it should be. The owner takes his word. If he'll tell him that he really gave him the extra $100, although he doesn't see it, he'll gladly give him back the extra $100. The other person says, but I really can't say 100% sure that I gave him the extra $100. When you hear such a machlek, real pleasure to hear, because you see really the honesty of each person. That's a breath of fresh air. But the Gemara does, you should have witness. But by Tzedakah, it says to the contrary. When you give charity, you know, you're supposed to give it to Seser, you're supposed to give it hidden. And it says, Matan b'seser yichafah, that a person who gives b'seser in Mishlei, he's able to bend over and cover over the anger. That's a tremendous midah of Matan b'seser. So the Gra says, both of these things are laws, are alluded to in this part. It says the following, Im kesef talveh, if you lend money to someone, so es ami, that has to be public, in front of witnesses. But es oni, if you're giving someone poor, which means you're giving charity, so that should be imot, only you and him, not to do it publicly. So he says that really both of these ideas can be found in this pasuk. Im kesef talveh, es ami. That could be public. To loan money, you have to have witnesses. But if it's es oni, you're giving someone only a loan, imot, that should be truly privately. And this, he says, is based on this pasuk. Now, really, it should say, the Or HaChaim asks the question, why does it say im? Here it doesn't mean it. So there, here it means you have to. So the Or HaChaim says, but still we ask a question, why did it choose to write the word im? If it doesn't mean if, but it means you must, so why did it choose to write the word if? So he says, because a lot of times, the person has a lot of wealth, like I mentioned earlier, has more than he can do with. And the person sees this, we always wonder, what does he need all this money? I mean,
why did all this money, why was he given all this money more than he needs then? Yaakov Avinu only asked for laugh and laugh, all the baggage little books. If everything is Minas Shemayim, so why can't we say, all right, it'd be good bread, a nice bread, good food and good clothes, but massive sums of wealth that some individuals will never use, and other people have nothing. I mean, why was the wealth given in this? So he says, the idea, like we answered before, the idea is, he says, a person is never given any money in order to spend it, to fritter it away, or not to use for any constructive purpose. And in fact, if he has money, that money is supposed to be used for a constructive purpose. Therefore, Hirsch goes into his treatise on Ribis. He also says the same idea. If you have money laying around, it's really not your money. He says the money was given to him, like we're saying, for a pikkudin, for a self-keeping. It really belongs to other people. But why can't the other people get it? Because of their actions or whatever it is, the Ben Shalem maybe doesn't trust them with a large sum of money. So they can't be mekabel their parnosa bikkudin. They have other reasons why. So on these people, he says, there was a gzera, the poor, that they have to never go knocking on the doors and to receive their daily bread without dignity. And because who's going to provide for them? Hashem's going to provide for them, so he has given the oshir, the wealthy person, the money in order that the person should be able to provide. So on one hand, Hashem has given everybody the necessity that they need. And even if a person sins and he's not worthy of God's largesse, of God's handing him, so he doesn't get it handed directly. But if he's here in this world, there is food for him that maybe some gevir happens to have, because Hashem punished this person, or for what was the will of God, that this person should have to undergo, we'll say, more difficulties, trials, in order to be able to achieve and to reap. But there's a portion here for anybody, but this is part of the Einish. So now, when a person has a lot of money, why does he have this money? He has a twofold reason. God made him the apotropos, to guard it and to give it to the other one, the other one needs it, but also to be mezaki him with the mitzvah of tzedakah. So he should end up having a mitzvah of tzedakah. So therefore, he says, the pasuk uses the word in kesef tal v'esami, meaning the following. If you'll see him, if you'll see that you have a lot of money, more than you need for yourself, right? So, tal v'esami, and you have money to loan to other people. So no, he says, that this is not the portion that belongs to you. But it's like the also, es oni imo, it's what Hashem gave you, the oni's person. So the idea is that you have to give to the oni, and also you shouldn't feel lesia lekenosha, it says, don't be to him like an oppressor. Enosha, he says, is also a lord from higher up. Don't act that you're like a higher level than him, because you're the same norman as he is. This is a special approach which a person has to understand, that you should, like the Chafetz Chaim speaks greatly in this. The idea is that a person should lend someone else the saver ponim yofos. And if there's a lack of chesed, so the lack of chesed will become, the lack of chesed is, you know, that a person shows is a terrible way. He speaks at length in this. Now he says not only does it go on loaning money, but it's also a mitzvah to loan anything that a person needs. If he wants, you should loan him a safer, you should loan him a pot, you should loan him a coat, whatever it is, you have to go ahead and you should loan him. And the leyera levavo, and a person shouldn't think how much of a tircha this person is bothering me. Because it's not that he's bothering you, but every time he knocks on your door, you could go ahead and you could be mekayim really a mitzvah. When a person is wealthy, it's more difficult for him to give the money than when he's poor, because the Yetzirah is that much greater. There's an interesting story in the time, I'll just make a brief example. There was a student in his yeshiva who, anyway, he was very poor and so on, and he was an outstanding student, but he was really so impoverished So he would always complain about his bitter lot in life, and he would say that if Hashem would only help, he would become wealthy. He would go ahead and he would give a fortune of money to Tzedakah, he would give Maaser and so on. Anyway, years went by, and this person did become wealthy, but he became so, he wouldn't give a penny to anybody, and his reputation became so terrible. Now, one time the Chofetz Chaim happened to, he ended up in Moscow. Moscow, that time, to live there, you had to be from big business financiers. Chofetz Chaim ended up in Moscow, came there once for his yeshiva, and everybody came to be kavuponim. And also this Gevir, who was known for his stinginess, he also came to the Chofetz Chaim. And when he saw the Chofetz Chaim, and then he remained, the people left, so he remained alone with him, and he broke into a great fit of tears. He was crying. And he says, Rebbe, he says, I'm extremely sick with a very terrible illness, and I don't know how to break through this illness, and I can't help myself. So he asked him, what kind of an illness does he have? So he says, I can't bring myself to give a penny. It's as if my hand is closed with a lock. And therefore, he says, I can't open it up. Now, in my heart is like a rock. So he was crying. He says, I remember when I promised you in the yeshiva that I would give a miser from whatever money if I'm blessed by God, but I don't have any power. The Satan seems to have the strength over me, and he doesn't permit me to give to the doctor. So, therefore, what did I need this for? Why did I need this for? So then the Chofetz Chaim told him a miser about a storekeeper. A person came in to buy something from the little store, so the feminine. So he wanted a little bit for a ruble, he wanted kemach, he wanted a little flour. So the storekeeper was busy, so he says, go take the flour yourself, fill it up, and whenever you bring me this, and then you'll pay me. So he went ahead, and in the meantime, he says, I'll get the measure to put the weight on the scale. So this person's troubling himself to weigh the scale, and the other one, he said, go fill it up, you know. So he went ahead, and he filled it up, and up, and up, and up. Finally, he comes over to him, and he says, that, oh yeah, 5 pounds of flour, he says, and you owe me 5 ruble. But, so the other one says, what do you mean? He says, I only asked you for 1 ruble, and you told me I should fill up this sack myself. So I went ahead and I filled it up, and now you come along and tell me I owe you 5. The storekeeper tells him, I thought that you changed your mind, and originally you wanted to take only 1, but now that you kept on filling it up, and I was busy here, he says, so what did you think, that you'll keep on filling up and you'll get by with the same ruble? So the Chofetz Chaim says the following, he says, you thought that they'll give you a lot of kemach, a lot of money, and you'll have the same leivtei, the same good spirit, and the same good will, that you'll go ahead and share the money freely with someone else. He says, you have to realize that at the same time, the weight of the Yetzer Hara will become that much stronger. It's Elihu Mazdeh. Of course, when you were poor and you didn't have any money, you really felt that you would give all this money. But then there's nothing that works that way. Once you have the money, your nisoyim will become, you can't have the rich man's money and the poor man's yetzer hara. The nisoyim becomes that much greater. Therefore, it says, b'loshanim, it's not that simple that you're satisfied.